Today's consideration of Psalm 15 is entitled, Who Shall Abide? The picture in 15 today is of two bookends and an encyclopedia set of books. They're on a shelf or on a table. Okay? Bookend number one, the question is asked, Lord, who shall abide in thy tabernacle? Who shall dwell in thy holy hill? That's 15:1. Between there and the end, there's 11 volumes of hardback books examining in detail the defining characteristics of a person of this abiding type of people. And then you have the second bookend, and that's the idea of a person of this caliber would abide in one place, this being his, the Lord's tabernacle, without ever being moved. 15:5. So the first question I have is who this person might be. Is it David talking about himself, encouraging himself, saying, hey, buddy, if you can just keep yourself to this, you're going to be all right. Is David talking to you and I as part of the great congregation or to the saints as a whole? Or is he talking about Christ? Is this an outline for us of the character of Christ or part of the character? The next question I have is, how is it that this person comes to abide in the Lord's tabernacle? Is it because he or she has done these 11 things? How scriptural would that be? Think about it. Old Testament, New Testament, all the scripturally based doctrine, what would that mean? Are the 11 defining characteristics pointed towards the phrase, who shall abide in verse 1? Or is it pointed towards he who doeth these things shall never be moved, from abiding in verse 5? Could it be that because of God's mercy and grace, that the individual is brought in, and as a result of being there, then God's presence, being the result of being in God's presence, this individual is overwhelmingly influenced to become or to absorb these 11 characteristics from him. And thereby, by the total experience of God's mercy and grace in all of this, thereby never again to be moved out of that abiding. How scriptural would this concept be? Think about it, Old Testament, New Testament. What we know to be sound doctrine. One final question I'll put forth. What is meant by the Lord's tabernacle? If it is the original tabernacle of Moses or Solomon's temple, we can readily answer question number one, who? The only people that could really enter into that tabernacle and dwell in it were the Levite priests and the chief priests, and no others. The people could come to the east gate, the people could go through, they could hand to those Levite priests their sacrifice, right? Outside there, in kind of the outer court, but they weren't allowed to go into the actual tabernacle, which was two chambers, an outer chamber and then the Holy of Holies. Common men and women couldn't go in there. Only Levites could go in there. So we already know the answer. If this is talking about the original tabernacle, the tent that followed along with Israel, actually led Israel through the wilderness and through many of their battles and through up to the time where Solomon built his temple. If this tabernacle idea is the modern Protestant or Roman Catholic Church, we can readily answer question number one also, as far as who. Anyone can walk in, anyone could sit and attend and join, become a member, right, or serve, or stay the night, or stay, I guess they could stay as long as they wanted to. But to go any further than that, to go any higher than that, you'd have to have a college or seminary trained person. They'd be mostly men. They would either be pastors or priests or bishops or cardinals or popes, right? And we know amongst these higher college and seminary trained people that these 11 defining characteristics are hit or miss. If it rather means to be in the actual presence of God, this idea of being, you know, in the tabernacle, dwelling on the hill, if it means to be in presence with God firsthand, then we need to immediately come to some conclusion regarding question number two. How did this person get there? So let me read you some of the titles on these 11 books in between the bookends of Psalms 15. Starting in verse 2. One title, one book, and if we open up these books, we'd get all the details into this. It's more than just a title here. We can't just skim by these and think we know. Or it's not like a checklist we could just check off. Yes, I'm this, and I'm this, and I'm this, and I'm this. Well, by golly, I match all these characteristics. I've already got this down. Can't do that. You're going to have to pull the book off the shelf and you're going to have to read through it and see what that actually means. What does it mean, this title, He That Walketh Uprightly? Or what does it mean? What does the rest of the book say besides just this title, He That Worketh Righteousness? Or He That Speaketh the Truth in His Heart? There's three volumes of this encyclopedic index, all from verse 2. Verse 3 gives us two more titles, two more volumes in this encyclopedic set. He that backbiteth not with his tongue, nor he that doeth evil to his neighbor. Think about how much ground either of those two titles could cover in an encyclopedic sect. Verse 4, there's four now titles coming from that. Nor he that taketh up a reproach against his neighbor, he in whose eyes a vile person is condemned, he that honoreth them that fear the Lord, he that sweareth to his own hurt, and changeth not. Four volumes. See them there? Verse 4. Then there's two more. The final two are from verse 5. He that putteth not out his money to usury, nor he that taketh reward against the innocent. You've gone through the list. You've checked it off. Yes, I've never done that, or I am doing this. See, there's the 11 volumes here. Six are placed in the positive, you know, do this. And five are placed in the negative, don't do this, or nor he that does this. And it appears at first it's a fairly simple list of things to do. Well, you've got to take each of these volumes down and read through them and see what they're actually telling us in a spiritual sense, not just what we can make out of it with our own carnal minds, but understand what the Lord actually means, the Holy Spirit, as the Holy Spirit's having David write this down, what the Holy Spirit means for each of these titles to relate. Let me try to explain the concern that I have both for myself and for those that might be looking in on Psalms 15 today. If it is our interpretation of 15, you know, put it this way, do these 11 things, accomplish these 11 things, and you're in, baby. If that's our interpretation, this implies that this person is actively seeking to abide and dwell in the Lord's temple or on his hill. How many of us truly, consciously, actively, persistently, deliberately, are seeking to do this very thing. I mean, we tell ourselves we are, but how many of us are actually doing that? You remember at the foot of the mountain there, Moses was going to go up and get the Ten Commandments. The rest of the people didn't want to go along with him. They were deathly afraid of meeting with God. Right? Only Moses was bound and determined to go up there. So let's look at the odds of probability here. The odds of probability are we're in that group of people down at the base of the mountain who in a couple days are going to start making a golden calf of their own. We just have to be honest with ourselves and understand the odds of probability, the number game here, right? We like to put ourselves in the hero role. How many of us are actually that in that hero role? And if this is our interpretation, it seems to me, in this case, that abiding in the presence wouldn't be much more than a temporary thing. You know, during the time that we're able to sustain the production of these 11 qualities, you know, God will be there. And we would never be moved until we're not able to individually sustain one or two or all of these characteristics. Also, the list of 11 things to do are not as easy as they first appear. I'm not so sure any of us have actually done all of this or are all of this. And I'm not sure that anyone other than Christ ever has. So where does that leave us? Are we in? Are we out? Are we not moved? Are we moved? You see my concern? So this is what we're going to be talking about today from our considerations of Psalm 15. We're going to examine this idea of tabernacle. I think that's important because the writer of Hebrews, in his chapters 9 and 10, insists that everything of the Pentateuch, that's the first five books of the Bible, everything that Moses had written, the Pentateuch, everything written in those about these Old Testament tabernacles, the writer of Hebrews says, is an earthly pattern of greater heavenly things concerning Christ. That's how important this idea of tabernacle should be to us. Then we're going to examine this idea of abiding and dwelling. That's going to become important. You remember in the Gospel of John, Jesus is quoted as saying, "Abide in me and I in you." So these aren't just Old Testament concepts we're talking about. This is New Testament as well. We shouldn't shy away from this idea of abiding or dwelling. So we're going to examine that. We're also going to examine this list of 11 defining characteristics of the abiding person. And we're going to examine all of this with the presumption that this Psalm 15 is relevant to all the saints of yesterday, the saints of today, you and I, the plowman and the plowwoman, the pastor, the cardinal, or the pope. Psalms 15:1. I'll end this section by quoting this. Read along with me. Lord, who shall abide in thy temple? Who shall dwell in thy holy hill?